Little Fictions, the incredible new album. Elbow, Little Fictions, available now.
The Guardian.
This edition of Chips with Everything is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace offers a unique domain experience that's fully transparent and simple to set up, and there's also 24/7 award-winning customer support. See for yourself. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code CHIPS to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Hello, it's Alex Hearn here, sitting in for Lee Alexander, who'll be back next week. Welcome back to another episode of Chips with Everything. Now, usually we look forward in our podcasts. Forward to the future of technology, forward to the future of digital culture, and ultimately, forward to the future of humanity. This week, however, we're going to have a look back, to 1949, in fact, and the birth of what would later be known as the Ratio Club. Writing in his journal on the 20th of September 1949, an English psychiatrist by the name of Ross Ashby noted that 6 days earlier, he'd attended a meeting in the basement of the National Hospital for Nervous Disease in London. He wrote,
"We have formed a cybernetics group for discussion. No professors and only young people allowed in. How I got in, I don't know, unless my chronically juvenile appearance is at last proving advantageous. We intend just to talk until we reach some sort of understanding."
But what was it they were trying to understand? Who else was in attendance? And how would the Ratio Club change the face of British cybernetics, and latterly, the artificial intelligence we see all around us today? All coming up in this week's episode. Where better to start than with a bit of historical grounding?
Okay, that's better.
This is Phil Husbands.
I'm Research Professor of Artificial Intelligence at the University of Sussex. And for many years, I've worked in bio-inspired approaches to artificial intelligence.
Outside of his academic work in artificial intelligence, Phil is also a leading expert on the Ratio Club. We spoke to him on Skype and started by asking him how and when the Ratio Club began.
The Ratio Club was set up by John Bates, who was a neurologist at the National Hospital for Nervous Diseases, which was in, still is, in Queen's Square in London. He got very interested in cybernetics over a period of a few years before that. But during that summer, there'd been what he described as a lot of cybernetic talk in the air. And then at a meeting in Cambridge in July 1949 on animal behaviour mechanisms, he had been speaking to various other people, various contacts he had at Cambridge and other people working in similar areas to him. And after he, on his way back from that meeting, he just felt, I really think we need to set up what he thought would be a closed membership for the elite group who would meet, you know, regularly somewhere. And it would be a dining club type of situation where they would have a meal, some drinks, and then, in his words, would turn in their easy chairs towards a blackboard where somebody would open a discussion. Now, why cybernetics? What was important about this? Well, a few months earlier, Norbert Wiener, who's a very famous American mathematician, had published a book called Cybernetics, Control and Communication in Animals and Machines, which that title of that book kind of simultaneously names this field that had been developing for a few years and kind of defines it, this control and communication in animal and machines. So it's the basic idea around cybernetics was, were the general principles you could apply to both animals and machines to understand, in particular, adaptive, intelligent behavior. So where the general principles would help you to understand what's going on in natural systems, which could also be applied to artificial systems to build intelligent, smart machines. And this had caused quite a stir in both the scientific and outside the scientific well, the publication of this book, immediately his thoughts were, well, a lot of these ideas have been floating around on the UK scene for years. In fact, he had been involved in work related to it during the war. And so I think there's a slight sort of indignant spur that sparked him to organise this thing. He thought, well, there's all these people knocking around already who are already doing things like this. Let's get together a British group. Let's talk about this. Let's see what we can contribute and so on.
As alluded to by Phil, Norbert Wiener, a pioneer in the field, defines cybernetics as the science of control and communication in the animal and the machine. And whilst many other definitions do exist, these similarities between animal, including humans, and machine was very much at the heart of cybernetics from the start. Importantly though, the formal criteria for joining John Bates's new club included a knowledge that preceded Wiener's.
Yeah, so Bates had two formal criteria for people that would be invited to join. So one of them was they had Wiener's ideas before Wiener's book appeared. So some of these people have been working on these things for years, and in fact some of them had had quite an important influence actually on development of the scene in the States. The other formal criteria was that they shouldn't be too senior, so they shouldn't be a professor. He had this no professors rule. So the idea was that this dining club should be very informal. There should be no hierarchy. There should be no use of what he called personal weight. So this partly reflects the fact that professional relationships in academia were more hierarchical then and so on, as they were in a lot of professions. But it was also partly because this was straight after the Second World War. There was this real feeling of optimism among a lot of these people that there were great things to be done. They could push forward. They could really start pushing in science and develop great new ideas and so on. Then the other things, which were much more sort of judgments from Bates, the unofficial membership criteria, which are just as important, were that the members really had to be smart, whip smart type characters who could join in with no problem in the whole cut and thrust of the argument and debate. You know, they didn't want anybody who wasn't going to be able to do that.
With these criteria in mind, Bates, Ashby and the other founding members went about recruiting a band of young and exciting academics, and, importantly, from a vast array of disciplines. These included
Horace Barlow. At the time, he was a PhD student in the physiology laboratory at Cambridge, working with the charismatic Nobel Prize winning professor there, Lord Adrian. He was great grandson of Charles Darwin, came from this very distinguished scientific family, but at the time completely unknown, just a PhD student. He went on to become a very important, prominent neuroscientist. Thomas Gold, an incredibly interesting character. At the time, he was a fellow at Trinity College. He was working in the zoology department on a radical theory of hearing, which was completely against anything that anybody thought was going on in hearing in the cochlea. And so most of the people in the field just said, oh, this is complete nonsense. In fact, he says the only people at the time who understood it were members of the Ratio Club. Decades later, his theory was accepted. It was decades ahead. And the interesting thing about him, which was why he was prime ratio material, was that he just completely disregarded disciplinary boundaries. He was already at that stage, had just become rather famous in the world of astrophysics because he, Bondi, Gold and Hoyle had just come up with steady state theory of the universe, which was then a massive thing in astrophysics. So he was already starting to become very famous in astrophysics, and he carried on his career like that. He became most prominently known as an astrophysicist, one of the really great astrophysicists of the 20th century, but he was always delving into other fields as well. He's a very multidisciplinary kind of guy.
And, of course, a young man by the name of Alan Turing.
Alan Turing was a member, one of the great founders of modern computing and artificial intelligence. Had done lots of very important work that hardly anybody knew about at that time during the war, code-breaking in Bletchley Park. He was there. He'd been recommended by Pringle. John Pringle became a very, very prominent neuroscientist, particularly insect neuroscience. And at this stage, he'd already done some really great work on flight mechanisms in insects and so on, which had some strong engineering and applied physics type flavor to it. So again, he was one of these very interdisciplinary guys. he knew, had known Pringle since their first days undergraduates at King's College in Cambridge. They were both scholars there. They knew each other well. And he suggested, let's invite one or two of the right kinds of mathematicians who can keep us biologists in order to make sure that the conversation doesn't go off into the stratosphere and never come back down again. So he suggested Turing, and Gold knew Turing as well. They knew each other through war work and so on. And so Turing was on the list.
Unheard of at the time, the Ratio Club brought together young academics from an array of fields. Biologists, mathematicians, computer scientists, all of whom were very much used to the rigid and hierarchical structures that existed in universities at the time. Safe to say this wasn't your average academic establishment, especially when one considers the typical Ratio Club meeting.
The meetings would start at 7 o'clock, go on for about 3 hours. There'd be a light buffet meal that was on trestle tables at the back of this room they used to meet in, and bottles of beer. So they would have a light meal and then lubricate the vocal cords. They all remembered this when we spoke to them years later. They said, oh yes, we'd have a few beers beforehand. And then off they'd launch in. So the very early meetings were two members would just give an overview of what they were doing to make sure everybody was sort of on the same page, knew what everybody else was doing, what their main interests were, and so on. And after that, you would get somebody would give a talk on their current research. And then what would always happen is the last hour or hour and a half or whatever, there'd just be a great free-for-all discussion, which they all remember as being great fun and really intellectually very invigorating.
Importantly, many of the ideas discussed during these meetings would go on to change the face of neuroscience, biology, physics, and, of course, computing. No more so than when Alan Turing gave a talk on his seminal 1950s paper.
Basically, it's on the contents of this very famous paper that he produced in 1950, which has got the Turing test in it.
We'll hear more about that after this short break. We'll also hear from the son of one of the Ratio Club's original members.
The Ratio Club fit with the transition in my father's interests from his PhD on analog computing to the question of how the brain works as an autonomous, goal-oriented system.
We'll be right back.
This edition of Chips with Everything is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace offers a unique domain experience that's fully transparent and simple to set up, and there's also 24/7 award-winning customer support. See for yourself. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code CHIPS to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
CHIPS fans, if you like this podcast, you might want to check out our recent series looking at the more sensual side of life. It's called Close Encounters and is presented by the amazing Alex Fox and looks in depth at the sex that makes us who we are. Word of warning, it's very in depth, so definitely a headphone jobby. To have a listen, head over to theguardian.com/podcasts or search for Close Encounters on your favourite podcast app. Welcome back to Chips with Everything. I'm Alex Hearn. Before the break, we heard from Phil Husbands about the Ratio Club, an informal meeting of young, whip-smart academics who broke all the rules imposed on them by the blinkered hierarchical universities they existed in, and instead chose beer, multidisciplinary cybernetics, and good old-fashioned debate. Gathering in a basement room below the nurses' accommodation in the National Hospital, London, each meeting saw a speaker, or sometimes two, take to the floor to present an idea. And in 1950, arguably the club's most memorable meeting, saw a young computer scientist by the name of Alan Turing present ideas from a recent paper of his that is quoted to this day.
So this is a talk he gave on, basically it's on the contents of this very famous paper that he produced in 1950, which has got the Turing test in it, which is this operational test he came out with for trying to decide when a machine has become intelligent. I think it's got too much prominence in history of AI personally. It's kind of an interesting test, but there's all sorts of flaws in it, which I'm sure Turing sort of recognised, but I don't think he meant it as anything other than a vehicle for some interesting philosophical discussion in this paper. But what's particularly interesting in the paper is where he starts talking about what kind of mechanisms you would need for a machine to become intelligent. And so he starts talking about that the machine would have to be adaptive, it would have to learn. So he's talking about brain-like mechanisms. He's also talking about evolving systems so that you'd evolve over generations. So you'd have some kind of artificial genetic system. These thoughts were absolutely decades ahead of their time. These things did come to pass. These things are used in AI now. And so even in America, they regard this Turing's paper as absolutely kind of seminal to AI. there he was discussing this at the ratio meeting, you know, just after it had been, or just before it was published. So they were one of the first audiences to really get deeply into this. And they remember that being a really big embroiled discussion about this, you know, the whole possible future, what became known as AI.
Many other important and seminal papers and ideas found a spotlight within the Ratio Club. But it wasn't just the content of the meetings that led to the fertile breeding ground for interdisciplinarity. This is Robert Mackay.
I'm a professor of mathematics at the University of Warwick, and I'm director of mathematical interdisciplinary research at Warwick.
Robert is also the son of original Ratio Club member and physicist, the late Professor Donald Mackay.
The opportunity to share ideas must have been an encouragement to the members to formulate new ideas and to refine them. For example, Ross Ashby compiled a list of questions which include some like, consider the various well-known optical illusions. What can information theory deduce from them? This actually formed a major part of my father's career in terms of deducing what the brain is doing from study of optical illusions. Number 17, what cerebral processes are recognizably analogical or digital in nature? Again, this question was fundamental to my father. There was apparently at the time, with the rise of digital computers, the idea that analog computing was any use was going down. And my father resisted this quite strongly, of course, because his PhD was on analog computing, but also because he felt that the brain probably wasn't purely a digital computer. He actually had a third possibility, stochastic computer, which probably is the best way to go forward. I remember him giving a lecture on this in New York when I was a PhD student at Princeton. Then there are two other questions I wanted to highlight. What reorganization of the civil service would improve it cybernetically? And what reorganization of the present economic system would improve it cybernetically? These are questions that are still very pertinent today, and I'm not sure have been solved.
As explained, these kind of ruminations very much seem to alter his own late father's trajectory.
The Ratio Club fit with the transition in my father's interests from his PhD on analog computing to the question of how the brain works as an autonomous, goal-oriented system. Of course, I wasn't alive at the time, but I think it provided him with this opportunity to discuss ideas in a stimulating environment and learn from others. His vision for the department he set up in Kiel, Communication Department, was certainly in line with the Ratio Club. Actually, it was funded by Granada Television, who maybe expected something different, but he set its goal to be the study of communication between the eye and the brain and the ear and the brain, and it maintains that direction to this day. He kept in close touch with some of the Ratio Club members, especially the Cambridge physiologists, Horace Barlow, who we've already mentioned, William Rushton and Pat Merton. I think he also kept in touch with Gray Walter.
The same could be said for many of the 21 members of the Ratio Club, who would later go on to, each in their own way, change the fields they belonged to. Thomas Gold is considered by many to be one of the 20th century's greatest astrophysicists. John Pringle was the first scientist to ever get recordings from a single neuron in insects, changing the face of neuroscience. William Rushton is regarded by many as one of the greatest figures of research into the mechanisms underlying vision. And, of course, Alan Turing, the father of computer science and artificial intelligence. But like all good things, the Ratio Club eventually came to an end.
So the real proper last meeting was 15th of September 1955. So 6 years after it had started, almost to the day, there'd been 37 meetings during those 6 years. And it was a very particular window in history, just after the Second World War and the outset of all these new ideas, information theory and so on. And by that stage, what had been a youngish group of scientists was now becoming a middle-agedish, and some of them actually were now well into their 50s by this stage. There were a few reasons why it ended at that point. Some of them had emigrated, careers had moved on, they had families were growing, so it wasn't as easy for them to get away to these meetings anymore. So that was part of the problem. But I think probably more significantly was that in some ways the club had done its job. The ideas had started to move into mainstream science, partly through the work of these people in the club. Barlow had started to understand how to apply information theoretic ideas in neuroscience by this stage. He'd done some really important work, which had become very famous by then. And, you know, unfortunately by then Turing was dead. He'd committed suicide a couple of years before. So it had done its job. It was just kind of a natural close at that point. But the legacy, number of legacies, I'd say the club had now, possibly most important for the members, was that there's absolutely no doubt, I mean, you know, those I've spoken to and then various things I've read from those who died before we were able to talk to them, there's absolutely no doubt that for nearly all the members, the Ratio Club meetings were really important in development of their scientific careers, in the development of ideas and so on, and in their professional network. And for some of them, like Pringle and a few of the slightly older ones, it was really crucial in getting them back into doing creative scientific work after the Second World War. Some of them, these older ones, did have some difficulty in really getting back into a different lifestyle. They'd been involved in such intense work during the Second World War and had to take, like Pringle, had enormous responsibilities he'd had to take on. And he found that these wonderful informal bubbling meetings were really helpful in getting it back in. So there's that, all that kind of personal legacy, but then intellectually there were some really important things. So the whole idea of biorobotics, you can really trace back to Gray Walter's work, for instance, and that's become a very big thing in AI. Various sorts of machine learning, this is a very, very important part of AI now, which uses probabilistic ideas from probability theory, specifically Bayesian ideas. There was a lot of work that you can trace back to work from people like Utley and Jack Good and so on in the Ratio Club, and that's become very influential in AI and underlies a lot of the sort of AI from Google and people like that, that's out there in the world now. But then, of course, there's a sort of wider legacy in terms of the students of these people, you know, the next generation and so on. And lots of people I've spoken to in the generation after that, who themselves became, you know, very important, famous scientists, have spoken how much they were influenced by various members of the Ratio Club.
And no more so than for Robert Mackay, Ratio Club member Donald Mackay's son.
Yes, so I'm very keen on interdisciplinary work. I'm at Warwick, I'm a director of mathematical interdisciplinary research, and it's certainly formed an important aspect of my own research. I like just using something in some other context. And I think it was the same for my brother David. So he followed much more the cybernetics direction than perhaps I have. But his first book was on information theory, inference, and learning algorithms. And if I could read an excerpt from the preface of this book, it really answers your question. Yeah, this is from David's book. Why unify information theory and machine learning? Because they are two sides of the same coin. In the 1960s, a single field, cybernetics, was populated by information theorists, computer scientists, and neuroscientists, all studying common problems. Information theory and machine learning still belong together. Brains are the ultimate compression and communication systems, and the state-of-the-art algorithms for both data compression and error-correcting codes use the same tools as machine learning.
That's all for this week's show. Huge thanks to Phil Husbands and Robert Mackay. If you want to read more on the subject, we'll include a link to a paper about the Ratio Club by Phil and a link to Robert's brother's book in the show's description on the Guardian website. This week's episode of Chips with Everything was presented by me, Alex Hearn, and the producers were Ian Chambers and Max Sanderson. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.